In Purgatorio 11, lines 94 and following, the travelers meet the artist illuminator, Oderisi. In painting, Cimabue thought that he should hold the field. Now Giotto has the cry, so that the other's fame is growing dim. So has one Guido from the other takes the glory of our tongue, and he perchance is born, who from the nest shall chase them both. Now these lines and following, Dante reminds us of how fleeting is fame and glory. He was much more confident about his own, however, and justly so as it turned out. As Dante's work and achievements mark a new development in the Italian language and European literature, so the same time of the late 13th century and early 14th centuries presents developments in the practitioners of painting and the plastic arts that prepare the way for the very self-conscious Italian Renaissance of later centuries. In fact, if we accept the rough definition of the Renaissance as the time of the rebirth of the artistic techniques and styles of the ancient Greeks and Romans after centuries of artistic darkness, we discover that this is a very questionable boast. The arts were not all that dark, nor altogether dead. What is not questionable is the role that Italy and Florence, in particular, played in the Restoration. Now, Italy had its fair share of turmoil after the fall of the Roman Empire and the centuries that followed. It could claim one thing that the French and German barbarians could not: the memory of being real Romans. The Latin language and culture, which had been imposed by Roman invaders in Western and Northern Europe, were for the Italians an inheritance from their own ancestors. This included the ruins of ancient temples, other civic buildings, aqueducts, and statues that littered the Italian landscape and still formed the artistic sense in a way that the northern Franks or Germans did not experience for the most part. Though the colonial cities the Romans had built did possess amphitheaters, aqueducts, bridges, baths, and temples, their original purposes often quickly disappeared. But many artistic and construction skills had been lost since the end of the Roman Empire, even in Italy. The know-how to make terracotta roof tiles, for example, and the systematic training of engineers and architects, except for the practical need for fortifications, much less of painters or sculptors. Many medieval churches in Italy and other places in Europe recycled ancient columns, since the skill to make monolithic columns had been lost, as well as access to the quarries in the Near East where they had been rough cut.
Let's keep going.
Lost also was the skill to carve capitals for the columns, and these were also dusted off and reused, which adds to the charm of the early churches in Italy, but also as evidence that the construction of needed buildings was a matter of making do with what was about. The early centuries of constant invasions, wars, and barbarian destruction meant that the life in Europe was one of surviving. The church, along with the emerging city-states, became slowly the sources of relatively stable government, and with that stability, agricultural recovery and commerce. And the money that these generated meant that attention could be turned to other endeavors. It is difficult for us moderns to understand what the European world was like before the Renaissance. As its heirs, we are puzzled by an earlier world of clearly defined and confining social classes and political, social, and religious institutions that were not democratic. Nor can some of us understand a world where our concepts of democratic freedoms were not even thought to be the best thing. The social position of the artist, for example, was very different from what it had become and has become. In the Middle Ages, no clear distinction between craftsmen and artists was made. So far from being regarded as a creative genius, on par with prophets and philosophers, the man who worked with his hands was not even considered the social equal of the professional soldier, landowner, or even merchant. No matter how gifted he was as a potter or sculptor, stonemason, or goldsmith, his work was menial. With the exception of everyday pottery and cheap votive statuettes or small devotional pictures, all work was made to order. The concept of art made with